All right. Welcome to Journey. Today, I'm pinch hitting for Myron this Sunday because he's not feeling well this weekend, so he asked me if I could step in. So he should be back with us next week. But before we get into our message, I wanted to recognize if you're a veteran or have served in our armed forces, if you could just take a minute to stand up, and we want to recognize you and say thank you. All right. Thank you. You may be seated. All right. So today, I want to ask the question, have you ever felt like giving up? Have you ever felt like giving up? And there's a passage we're going to look at, Luke 18. So if you have a Bible, you can get your Bible out or your phone. Open your Bible app to Luke 18, because here's the thing. Jesus knew that we're going to have moments where we feel like quitting, where we feel like giving up. And in particular, what he's addressing is the area of prayer, right? In the area of prayer, are we being persistent? I can tell you, I've struggled in this area. You know, from time to time, it comes up in my life where I'm just like, I've been praying for this for so long, you know, whatever it is. There's people in my life I've been praying for a long time. There's circumstances or situations I've been praying for a while. And it can, you can have those moments that feel easy to give up or kind of give in. So let's go ahead and read the passage real quick. I think if we can go to the next slide. Should have it up there. But we're looking at verses 1 through 8, Luke 18, verses 1 through 8. This is called the parable of the persistent widow. It says, then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. He said, in a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, grant me justice against my adversary. For some time, he refused, but he finally said to himself, even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me. And the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? So I want to start off, first of all, with verse 1, the opening verse of this chapter. It says, then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. So a while back, I was reading through Luke, and that verse jumped at me. You know, even though I've had read this passage a lot, this is the first time where I really remembered that verse just jumping at me, where it says he wanted to show them to always pray and not give up. Now, the chapter before this, Luke 17, ends with Jesus talking about his second coming, and he's talking about the signs of what the second coming will be. And so some scholars think the reason why Luke, the next chapter, 18, opens up with this parable is because nobody knows the time, right? Jesus said nobody knows the time when he'll return. And so he didn't want his disciples to get impatient for his second coming. So that may be a reason, because he does, you know, allude to the second coming near the end of the passage, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, also, one scholar out there said that he believes Jesus told this story because Jesus was still headed, at this point, he was still headed to the cross, right? And he knew that that was going to be a very confusing time for the disciples, that they weren't going to, at that moment, understand God's whole plan, right? But the other thing is, that he tells this story, you know, and then there's also the reason that he tells the story is to encourage those of us even today, right, and the believers who've been through the centuries and who will come to continue to pray, to wrestle with prayer, and seek God's heart. Now, this, in the book of Luke, there's a couple parables that are kind of like drawing vast contrasts. And this was really common in the Jewish rabbinical teachings of the first century, where to illustrate a moral or a spiritual point, the rabbi, the teacher, would tell a story of like kind of two extremes. And so let's kind of look at our two main characters in this parable. So first off, we have the judge, right? Now what we know about the judge, it says he didn't fear God and he didn't care what people thought. Now this guy sounds like somebody who's just totally self-absorbed, right? He's going to do what he wants to do. He doesn't really care. He's not making judgments based on what he believes is actually just. It's more in his own self-interest. He's corrupt. This is a corrupt judge. And he also, by his very like position as a judge, he's somebody who's got a lot of power, right? He's a powerful person. On the flip side of that, you have the widow. Now, in the ancient world, especially in the ancient Middle East, widows and orphans were considered the most vulnerable in society to being oppressed, to being taken advantage of. You know, as a widow, she wouldn't have had a family to advocate for her. She was essentially defenseless, right? But one thing that we do know about her is she was persistent. So one thing she did have going for her is that she was persistent. She was not somebody who was going to give up. So one of the things, kind of jumping back to the persistence and Jesus saying, he told this story, or Luke saying Jesus told this parable so that they would always pray and not give up. One of the things about the language in the original Greek, a parable, it says, and Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. And the language in that phrase essentially means not to give in to the bad. Not to give in to the bad. Right? So when you think about it, the tendency to despair, to quit, you know, it's giving up, it's giving into the bad, right? But when we look at reasons for why we don't persist, or reasons that we give up. There's three that I kind of want to focus on. First off is despair, right? And despair is something like, I think in other messages I've talked about this concept, or this, the word despair. Because I think despair is a huge issue and something we don't often talk about, but I think we need to understand it and also we need to understand the hope that God brings, right? He's the solution to despair. So there were Bible translators who were in the Gilbert Islands, and the Gilbert Islands are in Micronesia, so South Pacific, and they came across this phrase as they were doing their translation work, that the Gilbertese, those are the people of the Gilbert Islands, in their language, they had a phrase that illustrated the word despair, and they would say, my mind is at an end. My mind is at an end. And when you think of what despair is, or if you've ever fallen into moments of despair, it's sort of like I don't know what to do. Nothing's working. I'm at my wit's end, right? That's in our language we say, I'm at my wit's end. You know, there's, I'm at the end of myself. It signifies like a loss of hope, right? Or perplexity. Now, one of the things when we fall into despair, one of the things that is really encouraging to me is in 1 Samuel 30, it tells the story of David and his men. At this point, David is still on the run from Saul, and he's hiding out among the Philistines, right? Those are the enemies of the Israelites, and David's hanging out with them because he's like, the only way for me to get away from Saul is to hide among our enemies. And at that point, the Philistines are about to go back to war with the Israelites, and David and his men, the king is of the Philistines, or the king of the city that he was in, is like, David, you're going to come with us to go fight the Israelites. But then the Philistines are kind of like, hey, whoa, 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 we're not taking this guy with us. Like, he's one of them. And how do we know he's not going to turn around and fight against us, you know, when we go into battle? So then the king changes his mind. He's like, actually, you know what? Go back home. You got to, you know. And when they go back home, David and his men, you know, they find that the city that they were in is on fire. And their children and their wives have all been captured by raiders. And it says that the people, that David's men were grieving and mourning to the point that they wanted to stone David and kill him because they were so upset about what happened. And it mentions how grieved David himself is. But there's one verse in there. It's kind of like the turning point in that passage where it says, but David encouraged himself in his God. I love that. But David encouraged himself in his God. So in a moment where all seemed lost, right? David remembers who God is and says he encouraged himself in his God. And when you go back and read the rest of the chapter, it talks about that they, you know, he organizes men, they chase down the raiders, they capture or defeat the raiders. They get back their children and their wives and, you know, have a great victory, right? But when and that's the thing, right? So we might be on the edge of victory in those moments and we don't even know it. We might be, if we persist in prayer, if we lean into God, we may be on the edge of victory and we don't even realize it. I mean, what if that story had turned out a different way, right? What if it says, and David despaired and gave up, you know, and his men stoned him or whatever, you know? Like, that'd be the end of the story. Sometimes we don't think about, like, it's not the end of the story. We don't know the end of the story. So despair, that's one, sometimes we despair. Sometimes we doubt, right? Doubt's another problem. Oh, okay, God, you know, maybe you're not going to come through this time. I've been praying for, you know, this new job or for my children or whatever it is. I've been praying and praying for my parents, whoever it is. I don't see any changes. You know, maybe you're not going to come through. What's interesting about the word doubt is in Greek, it has a couple meanings. One, and the Greek word is aporio, which can mean to be without a way, to be without a way, or to be without resources, to be without a way, or to be without resources. Doubt, another word for it, is also perplexity. So the Greek word for doubt deals a lot with perplexity. Like, you know, to be perplexed is like confused or like, I don't know what's going on here. But it says perplexity amounting to despair. It can also mean perplexity amounting to despair. when we doubt. So a while back, actually, I was talking with a guy who was kind of like, I don't really know if I believe anymore. You know, he's a Christian, raised in a Christian home, and I think even went to a Christian school growing up. You know, now he's a young adult, I think in his mid to late 20s. But anyway, he was like, I don't really know if I believe anymore. And he said, I'm kind of wrestling with that. And I feel like I'm kind of giving God his last chance, right? He was struggling through some doubt. And, you know, he's a young man who went through some adversity. I think some of that adversity knocked him around. And now he's like, I don't really know. Perplexity. So a perplexity amounting to despair. You know, it's a lack of faith, right? When we doubt, we're actually not in a place of faith, which even the act of prayer is a step of faith, right? But when we're in a stage of doubt, we're not even in a place where of faith anymore. We're kind of like, I don't really know. I don't know if God can come through. And then the next one is disappointment. You know, sometimes we get disappointed with, I think there's even a book that out there, the author will come to me later. But anyway, it's called Disappointment with God. And a pretty well-known Christian writer wrote that book. But, you know, sometimes God's plans and our plans don't line up, right? And we even see throughout Jesus' ministry how they had expectations of him. You know, oh, he's going to come in, he's going to usher in the new kingdom, he's going to raise an army and overthrow the Romans, and then, you know, restore the nation of Israel. Like, they had all these expectations of Jesus, and a lot of times Jesus had to kind of push back and like, that's not how this plan is going to go right now, you know. And there are moments even that you read about where it talks about some of his disciples leaving him, right? Like, and abandoning him. Once he wasn't doing things according to their agenda, right? And the other thing, too, is, you know, our timetable, we have our own timetable of things. Okay, God, I've been praying for this thing for, let's see, about 2 years now. So, you know, we're on our way to year three. By year three, this needs to get done, right? Like, you know, or whatever it may be. Like, we've got our timetable. And I think Jesus is saying, like, just hang in there, right? You don't have all the information. Sometimes we don't have all the information. You know, in Genesis, it talks about the sin of the Amorites, I believe it is, had not reached its full measure, right? And in that passage, what it's talking about is that Abraham and his family and the Israelites, you know, they were in Egypt. They went to Egypt for a while. The Amorites were in Canaan. They were Canaanites. And one of the reasons that the God was still working with the Amorites, right? Their sin wasn't at their full measure, it says. And he kind of needed, like, hey, these are my chosen people, but I'm also working with the Amorites. He had his timetable with the Amorites, right? Simultaneously, he had his timetable with the children of Israel. And while they were in Egypt, and, you know, he was still working with the Amorites until kind of things converged, right? It's like, okay, now it's time for to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt and into the promised land. And, you know, the Amorites, you know, their time is up. So God has his own timetable. And we need to be prepared for that. Or understand, I should say, that his timetable is not our timetable. Now, let's go back to the parable, right? So you had the judge, the unrighteous judge, and you have, who's totally about himself, right? And his power, and he just does what he wants to do, right? That's this, who this guy is. And then you've got this persistent widow who's constantly, like, essentially she's annoying. She's annoying to the judge. And he's like, you know what? Every day she's on my case. Like, this lady just won't leave me alone. You know, I think it says, he even says, like, hey, she might even attack me. You know, yeah, verse 5. Yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me. Right? She's annoying to the point where he's like, I don't know what this lady's going to do. I just need to get her off my back. Right? So he rules in her favor, right? She gets justice. Now that's who this guy is. Again, remember we're talking about the teaching is kind of two extremes in these types of parables or stories. And Luke has a couple parables where Jesus is kind of using extremes to illustrate his point. So he's like, if that guy, who's all about himself, he's unrighteous, he's self-absorbed, if that guy is willing to just get to a point where, like, okay, I'm going to give this lady justice, how much more, right? How much more? He's drawing a contrast. Will God answer our prayers or give us justice, right? You know, picking it up in verse 6, and the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. Will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? You know, God is he's the righteous judge. The Bible says he even knows the hairs on our head. Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. But then Jesus ends with that question. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? So here's some things why we should persist. First of all, Jesus is coming back. And we don't know when he's coming back, but he's coming back. We need to be ready, right? Like, I think you guys have probably all seen the bumper stickers, like, Jesus is coming back, look busy, or something like that. I forget what it says. But, you know, he is coming back. He is looking for faith on the earth. He's looking for those who will be faithful, who will not give up. You know, in Revelation even, I believe it's Revelation chapter 6, there's even a illustration of the martyrs, those who've been killed for their faith, at the throne, or at the altar, God's altar in heaven. You know, John's having this vision of them. And they're crying out, the martyrs are, about for justice. You know, God, how long until you avenge our blood? They're crying out to him. And in that passage, it says that, it talks about God saying until the full, or it's a voice. I got to look at the passage exactly. But anyway, it says that John essentially hears that it's not until the full number of their brothers, you know, are complete, of those who will be martyred, are complete. See, God has his own timetable. But in that passage, when you read it, you also see that he comforts those martyrs too. And so we can take comfort in the fact that God is with us, that he hears us. He's looking for faithfulness. You know, sometimes I've wondered, actually, what the church will look like when Jesus comes back. Because you read about, even in Revelation, about the seven churches in the first few chapters of Revelation. And All of them except for two, there's a rebuke in at least five of the seven. He's kind of rebuking them a little bit because, or a lot, because of they're not fully there, right? Like, there's something lacking in them, and he's trying to address that. He's trying to correct that, you know. And, you know, will we get so overwhelmed with our circumstances, with the darkness that's in our world, where we just want to give up, right? Like, we just had an election this week. For some people, hey, they might be happy with how that turned out. There might be other people who are just like, whatever. You know, here we go again. Didn't turn out the way I wanted. There's some people who felt that way even before the election, didn't even vote, right? You know, we put our hope in things. In this country, sometimes we put our hopes in our elections and things like that. But what Jesus is saying is when we put our hope in him, hang in there, right? Hang in there. The other thing is God is always on time. God is always on time. It may not be our time, but he's always on time. You know, a few years ago, I was in a job and I was working at a school where there's a lot of big organizational change happening. And I've worked in education a long time. It's not the first time I've seen big changes happen in a school. But this felt a little bit different, you know, and my department that I was in was one of the departments where a lot of that organizational change was being driven through there, right? And so I kind of was like, okay, God, I don't know. You know, I know there's people that are leaving. There's people, like, what's going to happen? And I worked on a one-year annual contract. That's how my job worked there. So I was like, I don't know. My contract may not be renewed this year. And God kind of gave me some signs. And, you know, at that time where I was sort of like, yeah, this is really feeling like this might be my last year here. And I didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, I was praying. I was applying to other jobs everywhere. You know, I had some interviews that turned out really well where I felt like, oh, man, that felt like a great interview. I think I'm going to get a call back, or I've got a real shot at this job, you know. And then just for whatever reason, it didn't pan out, right? And as my contract is getting closer to the date where they have to decide, right, whether they're going to renew it or not, you know, I had probably about 2 months before my contract ended, met with, like, my boss and somebody from HR, and they were just like, hey, you know, we're going through some change. You know, I got the whole spiel. We're going to go in a different direction. Like, it wasn't a shock at that point. Like, so I was just like, okay, that's, you know, I understand. Change happens. But I kept applying, and I was like, okay, God, where's this job? It's going to open up. I was applying everywhere, all across America, pretty much. From sea to shining sea, I was applying for jobs, you know. I was like, okay, God, like, if you want us here, we'll stay here. But if we got to move, we'll move. Like, I don't care. And nothing happened. And I was praying. Other people were praying for me. People even in this church were praying over the situation. I was fasting, you know, like, all of the things, right? I was trying to do, I was like, God, okay, come on. Where's it at? Timetable. God, you know my contract's going to be ending pretty soon, right? Like, okay, we're about 2 months away, 1 month away. And then, like a week before my contract, before my very last day there, I get a call to, like, hey, come interview for this job, which was right here in Tacoma, actually. And on the morning of my last day at that job, they interviewed me. Like, hey, could you come in for an interview that day? I was like, okay. I was like, this job's going to be behind me in a week, so if I got to come in late, you know, whatever. Which I told them, and they were fine with it, but anyway. I didn't say why I was going to be late. I just was like, I'm going to be late, you know. But anyway, so I go, I interview. That job ends. I remember, like, the next day I'm looking up, like, how do I apply for unemployment and all this stuff. And And then all of a sudden I get a phone call 3 days later, right? 3 days later. Hey, we want to offer you this job. Like, I was unemployed for 3 days. And I still think, like, whoa, God, like, because for months I was applying for other jobs, praying, and, you know, and it's like the morning of the last day was my interview, and 3 days later, I'm employed again, you know? And I didn't have to, you know, worry about filling out the unemployment paperwork, any of the, or the, you know, whatever paperwork. It was just like, boom, this is done, this is here, right? And so God had his own timetable. It was kind of like right at the last minute, the 11th hour, he comes through. So we need to remember that God is always on time. He is on time, right? And then the other thing is, God is not like the judge in this story. Who, that judge, all about himself, doesn't care about others. God deeply cares about others. In fact, in the Psalms, it says he's a father to the fatherless and a husband to widows, illustrating that to the most vulnerable in society, he's there for them. He's there for them. He's watching out. He's taking care of them. In fact, and he's just, right? He's going to do it the right way. The Greek word in the New Testament for righteous, right, talks about God is a righteous judge. This is one of the things that, words that frequently describes who God is. The Greek word actually means without prejudice or partiality, right? He's a judge when it refers to his righteous judgments. It's saying he doesn't have prejudice, he doesn't have partiality, he is totally fair. Totally and completely fair. So, one of the things I want to encourage you as I wrap it up is don't give up. Hang in there, right? You know, I think there's people in my life who I've been praying at least 20 years for them to get saved. And there's a lot of times over these past 20 years or so where I've been like, God, what's going to happen, right? Like, you going to come through? You know, I'm sharing a message with you, but this is a message for me too, right? Like, we got to trust him. You know, and I heard a story about George Mueller. I don't know how many of you are familiar with George Mueller, but he was a guy who took care of orphans in London in the 19th century, 1800s, and was really well known for a dynamic prayer life. And somebody asked him, are you, like, why do you pray for all these people who don't know God to know God? Like why do you think God's going to actually answer those prayers? And he responded by saying, why would I be praying for them if I didn't think God would come through? Or something along those lines. But he said, because they're in my life, I'm going to pray for them. And I'm going to pray with expectation, right? That he hears prayer, that he answers prayer. So, we've got a lot of challenges in our lives, you know, as a nation, as a community. All of us have our own personal challenges that we experience or that we may be going through. Or maybe, hey, I realize sometimes we're in great places. Like, hey, my life's actually pretty good right now, you know. But hey, in 6 months, you might have a challenge that you're navigating through, right? But don't give up. Don't give up. You might be on the verge of a victory if you don't give in and don't quit. And we see that the disciples, remember, this was to encourage them. I wonder how often the disciples, as they were in prison or being persecuted or maybe even on the run, fleeing persecution, I wonder how often that they thought about, remembered this parable, because it says that he mentioned it to them so that they would not quit and not give up. And the disciples all lived victorious lives, right? Like, our faith, we're indebted to them, you know? But what if they would have gave up? So don't give up, because you don't know. Again, you might be on the verge of victory, so. All right, with that, I wanted to invite Todd up to close this out.